I had left, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, "Get up, take the child and his mother and flee to Egypt, and remain there until I tell you, for Herod is about to search for the child to destroy him." Then Joseph got up, took the child and his mother by night and went to Egypt, and remained there until the death of Herod. This was to fulfill what had been spoken by the Lord through the prophet, "Out of Egypt I have called my son." When Herod saw that he had been tricked by the wise men, he was infuriated, and he sent and killed all the children in and around Bethlehem who were 2 years old or under, according to the time that he had learned from the wise men. Then was fulfilled what had been spoken through the prophet Jeremiah. A voice was heard in Ramah, wailing and loud lamentation. Rachel weeping for her children, she refused to be consoled because they are no more. When Herod died, an angel of the Lord suddenly appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt and said, "Get up, take the child and his mother, and go to the land of Israel, for those who were seeking the child's life are dead." Then Joseph got up, took the child and his mother, and went to the land of Israel. But when he had heard that Archelaus was ruling over Judea in place of his father Herod, he was afraid to go there. And after being warned in a dream, he went away to the district of Galilee. There he made his home in a town called Nazareth, so that what had been spoken through the prophet might be fulfilled. He will be called a Nazarene. The Gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, O Christ. Please be seated. For our meditation this morning, I want to focus on tension and paradox. When two things are true, but they don't fit with each other, things we simply can't understand. It's not within our logical capability. The New Testament, and frankly, all of Christian theology, is filled with these types of things. It's what theologian Robert Denny says, our theology provides us paradoxical vision. The ability to see through two things that are both true, but we don't really understand how they fit together. As I thought about the topic of paradox and tension, those places where when we try to understand things very carefully, we can often be led down an unhelpful path. And when I thought about that, I thought of being in what was my first foreign language class I took in college, which was Hebrew. And it was a reading course, meaning we were learning to read the Hebrew Bible, not speak Hebrew. You're in your first year, what it looks like is to memorize huge amounts of grammar and vocabulary so that by the end of the year you have learned all of the grammar for that language. And in the midst of this, the thing that always throws you for a loop are new verb forms. Whenever you get a new verb form, everything, you have to go and relearn everything that you've done and so on. And what you're thankful for is that usually the pattern of the new verb fits the pattern of the old verbs. Well, 1 week when I was in Hebrew class, Professor Spaltholz, who was my Hebrew teacher, introduced a new verb conjugation. We've had a lot of them. This one happened to be called the Hishtefel, if you're interested. And it's very confusing. It doesn't follow a single rule of anything you've learned before. And when the professor told us, we had to learn all the ins and outs of this new form, and saw how complicated and unique this verb was, then we discovered there was actually only one verb in the whole Bible that uses it. It's the verb kava, or to bow down or worship, if you're interested. If not, forget it. And then what you discover is that when you actually use it, almost all the letters fall away. Fantastic. Encouraging for first-year students. The reason I tell that story is because then a student asked, and here became kind of the lesson, This seems really different from anything else. Can you explain to us why it looks so different? And Professor Spaltholt smiled and he said, well, if you take Ugaritic, Proto-Semitic, Northern Samurite, and Akkadian at the doctoral level, you might be able to figure out why this is the case. And then he smiled and said, but I don't know it. And this was our Hebrew professor at the end of his career after a lifetime of studying this. And instead he said, you know, some things when you're learning a language you should think about, like the moons and the tides. I know there's a relationship between them, and if I really got into studying it, I might be able to figure out how those function, but I'm pretty sure it's faster just to accept it and memorize it. And I know there are some of you here today who have gifts in math and science and will probably tell me that moons and tides aren't really that hard to follow, but we were a bunch of theology students, so math wasn't our strength. And Professor Spaltholtz's point was practical. We're probably not going to understand why this verb form looks the way it does, but we can know how to use it, how to translate it. No matter why it looks like that, it means to worship or bow down. That response of Professor Spaltholtz of the moons and the tides became kind of a refrain for us throughout our undergraduate experience. We're a small group of theology students. And any time we saw something we were frustrated with or found confusing, someone would just finally shout out, moons and the tides, including if we were with others who had no idea what we were talking about, in which case we'd invite them to say, well, it's the moons and the tides. It was cathartic. Now, I tell that whole story because I was thinking about things we can't really understand in today's gospel reading. Many of you are really familiar with this story about the Holy Family's flight and then return from Egypt. And I bring all of this up about tension and paradox because of a theme we have in the Gospel of Matthew that's already present here. The providence of God. The story shows that God's plan for the world. God clearly knows everything that's going to happen, and this angel continually shows up to Joseph, as well as the Magi in dreams, to give them directions on what to do next. It's an omniscient God, all-knowing. Further, God can clearly act in human affairs in any way God wants. An omnipotent God, all-powerful. And God's plan clearly is not going to be thwarted by human evil, here particularly from Herod. And this gospel very frequently is discussed to show God as all-powerful and all-knowing, having a plan that is above and beyond human understanding. And that's true. But there's a challenge with that focus. If you look more carefully, what is this omnipotent and omniscient God actually doing? The angel warns the Magi and Joseph multiple times. But God is not the one driving the plot. At least it doesn't look like it. Instead, it's Herod. Herod seeks to kill the child, and they withdraw. It doesn't say that God helped them in the travel. They then reside in Egypt. It doesn't say God prepared a place for them there. Then it says the angel lets them know in a dream when it's safe to return because Herod had died. It doesn't say God had any hand in that or in their return back. The plot continues to be driven by external factors. God's just letting them know. When they return, they discover Herod's heir, and thus they're warned again to withdraw, seek refuge in the town of Nazareth. Again, an angel tells them, but no other intervention of God in this world is discussed here. God, who is all-powerful and who has this plan, appears to be choosing not actually to do too much in this world that God is fully able to do anything in. And this is probably particularly bothersome to many of them because of the way Herod tried to kill the child by committing a crime against humanity, killing all the children in and around Bethlehem 2 years old and younger. It's horrible. And this providential God, whom Matthew shows is capable of acting in this world, seems like doesn't stay this atrocity. Now, some have tried to smooth over this very uncomfortable reality with a few possible explanations. There was one study done almost 100 years ago now that tried to calculate, given that it's a small town in the area of Bethlehem at any given time, how many children would have actually been there. I mean, maybe it wasn't really that many babies, but of course, even one would be an atrocity. And others have noticed that the angel appeared to Joseph in a dream. There's nothing saying that the angel didn't appear to other parents in dreams, so that when they went to carry out the order, there weren't any children there at all. Maybe. But we should be honest that this gospel story doesn't smooth over that tension for us. If the gospel wanted to do that, it could have simply left that one verse out. It's only one verse. And in fact, it's the only place where this event is recorded anywhere in the New Testament or outside of it. And there probably is a theological reason for its inclusion, which is paralleling Moses and Jesus. But today, I want to reflect on this in the paradox and the tension that it is. This is the most striking and shocking moment of this story. But throughout the entire thing, we have the same tension. We have a providential God who has a plan for the world that's being carried out despite human evil. And I have no hesitation calling what Herod was doing evil. But the same God who could act in the world to enact this plan that is providentially in order, it doesn't feel like God's intervening all that much. The text leaves us in that tension. And I don't think that this is a time when, as cathartic as it would be, just shouting out moons and the tides is really all that helpful. We really want to understand. And I think we want to understand not just because we want to understand why God acted this way all those many years ago, but also in our own lives. Why is it we have to suffer? Why is it our parent or our spouse or our children had to suffer? Why is it atrocities continue to be committed in our own time? And that's the thing about tension and paradox. It's not just what Professor Spalteholtz tried to tell us about the moons and the tides. Those are hard to understand, but if you worked hard enough at it and went into depth of it, you could actually understand it. Paradox isn't just something that's hard to understand or demands that we take a new perspective on things. It's something we truly cannot understand. Human minds can't do it. It's the whole idea of what it is. And there are many things in Christian theology that we sometimes call paradoxes or tensions, like Jesus being fully God and fully human. Jesus can't be fully two things, yet he is. But one of the hardest is the one we face here, and it comes up so frequently in our own lives. A providential God who is all good, yet the persistence of human sin and suffering and evil inflicted on others. It's the paradox that while the new creation is fully here, the present evil age still persists. It's something we just can't understand, how both things can be true at once. Instead, we can embrace that part of faith is what we don't know, because we can't. Our minds can't understand how God operates. But the grace in our life is that we don't have to understand. There's another side to tension and paradox that's a certain kind of freedom. It's a freedom that we don't always have to be able to answer how God allows something to happen. And that, frankly, is just as true for the good things that happen in our lives as the bad things. The paradoxical vision of the world is to recognize that God is working in ways that are beyond our understanding and that many things are held in tension. We avoid coming too quickly or too easily to any solution. Instead, what we're invited to do is to trust. To say that God can work in what would be human paradoxes is to say that God knows what God is doing. The grace we have is that it's okay for us to say, sometimes I have no idea how to square what just happened in my life with what I know. Because God knows. We can move forward and progress through life because the grace we receive is not from ourselves. It isn't up to our own cleverness or ability. It's up to God. God holds us in all moments. Those when we really can understand, or at least feel like we understand who we are and who God is at this time. And those moments when we really cannot. Because in all moments, God is present with us, among us, with us, and in us. Thanks be to God. Amen. I invite all those who are able to stand for our next hymn.